It's also profitable ads, but the pixels and the tracking that TikTok provides you with, it just shows very, very few conversions. So we set it up in something called Northbeam, where they can track the clicks and views and the attribution for much more days. And then you can suddenly see that it's working.
And that's really cool. And Northbeam, can you maybe elaborate a bit on that?
I'm not sure I should have mentioned it. It's kind of like a trick of the trade.
Hi everyone, this is Seb from Ask Phil and you're tuned into What's E-Coming. Direct-to-consumer e-commerce is rocketing right now. It's never been easier to start your own business and scale it all around the world. With this podcast, we're inviting founders, CEOs, e-commerce managers, top designers, all kinds of industry experts to give insights on how they see e-commerce developing in the future and give tips that you can use to grow your business today. Today, we're joined by Lotta and Casper from LabFresh. Back in 2017, the couple asked themselves, what if we never had to do laundry again? And with that was born an idea for a life-proof clothing brand. Splash, stain, and smell-resistant LabFresh clothes are the future of fashion. Paul and Martijn have invited the founders to the studio today to talk technology, hear tales from the Dragon's Den, and learn what the next steps are for the forward-thinking brand. All that and more in this month's episode of What's E-Coming.
So, Casper and Lotte, welcome today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you guys in here in the studio in Amsterdam. Yeah, let's start with the first question. Are you wearing some LabFresh today?
I'm not. But
we only make menswear, so I have to wear it all the time. And often it's the prototypes. I'm also wearing it right now. I think this is day number 4 that I'm wearing this t-shirt.
Nice. Yeah. And isn't it smelly at day number 4?
Not according to me, but no one has smelled me today, actually. So you can just come over here if you want to check.
I believe you.
Well, average that our customers wear our products is 3.6 days before they wash it.
3.6 days.
Yeah, where normal products is like 1.1 and our products are 3.6.
Wow.
Yeah, it's saving a lot of water.
And maybe for the people who are not familiar with LabFresh yet, can you maybe give a bit more background about the technology you use in the shirts and the clothing?
I can also show it a little bit because yeah. You were kind enough to give us a glass of water and electrical equipment next to it. So I can just throw it around a little bit. But when you put the water here on the front, you probably can't see it with the camera, but then the drops will stay on the outside and it doesn't get dirty, not even if it's red wine. And at the same time, if I take the water and put it on the inside, then it will actually suck in. What can you say? It will absorb the fluids, but it stays dry on the outside. So it hides your sweat stains.
That's cool.
And at the same time, it's antibacterial. So not only do you not look like you're sweating, you also don't smell like sweat.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And the idea is to just make clothing that perform better. Yeah, everything we do, we always, innovation goes really hard. Sportswear are using interesting technologies, but the clothes we wear every day remains the same. Like the last big breakthrough was non-iron and it was in the 50s. So we really just kind of want to disrupt, make clothing perform better, consume it more consciously. That's like the idea.
Cool. That sounds nice. And you're producing t-shirts, but I also saw polo shirts.
It's basically all basics. Pants are called. We did pants before. We have a new generation launching in a couple of weeks. Mostly shirts, t-shirts, polo, sweaters, socks. So just a full outfit of the, whatever a man needs. We got it.
I'm curious to also hear who was your first customer, because I can imagine you create this great product, probably based on your own experiences and your own needs. Who was the first customer outside of the friends and family circle? Do you remember that?
Well, we launched on Kickstarter. So we found this fabric that we really liked. And then we just, let's test it. Like our MVP, put it on Kickstarter, get a paying customer for it. So our very first customer was on Kickstarter. We did around 150,000 euros in that month from our apartment in Amsterdam Oost. And then we looked at each other like, okay, let's try to make this into a company.
And how did you make the Kickstarter work so well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a couple of things coming together because actually the sample that we shot it with was not really ready. I remember when it came in, it was supposed to come in on a Wednesday, but it only came in on Friday at 1 when our whole team of crew was ready to shoot it. And it was the first sample we saw, and then I cried a little bit because the buttons were still ugly and everything was just not how we wanted it to be. But then we still shot it. And I think what we did is we made the video very personal. I think that's one thing that works really well on Kickstarter. And we had quite some PR on day one. So we really went all in. Casper built a good list for email. And I think that's the tip with Kickstarter, just to go really hard on day one to create some buzz. Then we got picked up by Kickstarter as one of their fresh picks or top picks or things they love.
And then it ignited.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it was really like this clip of a white dress shirt with red wine running down it. It went viral to an extent where we were in earned media, or what can you say, like in newspapers and TV stations in like 42 countries. We were on Russian TV and Indian TV and Iranian newspapers, and it was crazy.
Yeah, that's also a downside though, that there are so many customers spread out.
Yeah, it's hard to sell or ship all around the world.
Yeah, we had to also ship to countries, and then it came back like 3 times, and we had to ship to the Maldives, and it was not a very profitable campaign. But getting your first 1,000 customers is maybe one of the hardest things to do, and that we did.
And if you look at the technology, so if I understand well, you've been searching for this technology, then thought about how can we integrate this in fashion. Yeah, so you came up with the concept, and who did it for you, or who made the first prototypes?
Yeah, I would say one of the things that I thought before I got into the DTC world and building actual physical products, I always thought it must be so hard to make an electrical bike or a shirt or whatever. But yeah, in reality, someone else will always be making it for you. And in our case, we found some French guys who had a patent and a really nice laboratory. And they really liked to be in the laboratory, but they did not really like selling stuff or telling the world about it. So we would just tell them, if you allow us to use your patent, then we will tell the whole world about it.
Yeah, and at the moment we have different setups. So every category has their own technologies. So basically what we set up a supply chain where we work directly with technology partners, fabric mills, and then the product where they actually stitch the products. So we go quite deep into the supply chain. And sometimes we combine the fabric mill together with a technology partner, and then it's just a lot of trial and error. A lot of things go wrong, and then sometimes it goes right, and then we have an amazing product.
And how did you find your first technology partner?
I just went through some academic databases, and I found some white papers, and then I saw who are the authors, and then I find them on LinkedIn.
Easy as that. But I can imagine as being one of the authors of those white papers, thinking like, Casper, but you don't have a company yet. You have an idea. Why should I trust you and spend my time working on a product with you?
Let me tell you the worst thing you can say if you go to Portugal or Switzerland and sit down with someone and want them to make your products. The worst thing you can say is, I have a great idea for a Kickstarter. Like, they hear that really often, and 9 out of 10 times it wasn't a good idea.
I guess also a bit fake it until you make it, because Casper at the time was still at the cloakroom where he was the co-founder of, which where I also work, where we met each other. So then we also kind of faked it's the cloakroom wanting to make their own brand. So yeah. In the beginning we made us like look bigger than
we have to say. We come from an established business.
Yeah,
you can see on LinkedIn that we have 60 employees and you can trust us. But if you don't have a website and all you have is a good idea for Kickstarter, then they will not touch it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the first years of the company, or actually the first months, what has been the biggest challenge while starting the company?
I guess I have to say patience, because...
With me.
Well, that's an ongoing issue. It's also because then to make a product, it just takes a lot of time. And then you just really, really want to get going. And I think, for us, the product is the biggest bottleneck. Because we constantly want to make it better, or when we want to make a fabric a little bit thicker, and then you constantly cannot order enough and keep stuck because you're making changes, so we're always out of stock. So that has been a challenge from the beginning and still is.
Yeah. Like, to build on that, if you don't have any patience, but you also take an investment, what happens is you're going to start spending a lot of money on paid marketing with a product that is not optimized enough. Like that a product and a supply chain that's not scalable yet. And that happened a little bit with us in the beginning. We just wanted to get going. We loved our prototype, but it needed to be refined a bit more to be a match for the mainstream consumer instead of just the Kickstarter consumer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like 5 years now from now, I finally feel we have some products that are really ready to scale. but if I look at some products that we made in the first 1 or 2 years, it's hard to look at. But I guess also like an interesting journey. Like when I see our first Kickstarter page, Casper built it in PowerPoint. he put shade behind the model, and I think that it was really impressive. Like, you did that. And then I look at our website now. It's just nice to see the phase that you're going through. You have to appreciate it also.
Cool. And fast forward, so 5 years from then, what was the biggest challenge of this year so far?
The same.
It's an ongoing topic.
No, like getting the products. If you go to our website now, we're out of white shirts and navy shirts, the two top sellers. And this happens because it's annoying to produce without technology. So things go wrong often. It's kind of fixed from next month. I shouldn't say that without crossing my fingers and stuff. But like, it took a long time to make the technology stable, and it's only there now.
And I can imagine that lead times now with the new economic environments, maybe also, don't make it easier. Too.
Absolutely. Like, we are going to do a birthday deal next week, which we, where we need a lot of t-shirts on a specific date. And then we already postponed that date 2-3 weeks. And now again, the t-shirt is going to be delayed for 2 more weeks because then someone is sick in the factory with Corona and then 2 lines fall out. So yeah, we do feel that there's a lot of delays. Yeah.
I'm just happy we only dabbled with producing in Asia for a little while. Almost everything is in Europe. We tried out a little bit in China and Vietnam, just around the time where that container ship got stuck in the canal and all the raw materials was in back order. And we had to put fabric on airplanes, and it was just like, oh, let's just stay with Europe. This is not the right timing.
And what are the places to go in Europe for your brand? So where do you produce it?
Only Portugal and Switzerland at the moment.
Switzerland?
Yeah, they're very good at fabrics.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And actually also, because they're so good at technology, there's not a lot of like manual work in fabrics. So therefore, Switzerland is actually also a relatively cheap country to produce fabrics in. Yeah.
Yeah, we went there for the price.
That's interesting. That's an interesting one. Yeah. Hey, yeah. And looking back, what has been the biggest mistake you made?
For me personally, that was what we talked about regarding patience. We took €1 million in a big angel round. For us, a big angel round early on. And then we thought, it's time to take over the world. Let's run paid ads in 22 countries. What's not to love about this product? And I think we should have taken it a little bit more slow and refine everything.
I think that's a challenge as a starting entrepreneur or starting company when you already start with €1 million in the bank. You're like, okay, let's spend it quick.
I mean, you might like... I know of so many people who raise way bigger seed rounds than that if you're in a real technology company making software or something. And yeah, I think it's money. You have to associate the right mindset with the money you raise. I really think so.
Yeah. I think you make so many mistakes during the years, but I think it's also, perspective, because everything you do, it also makes you learn from it. Like the first time we hired a big team, I think we hired a little bit too fast because we had a lot of growth in that year and then growth stagnated a little bit because we had some production problems and then you're with a too big team. So mistakes are also just to learn from, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And with hiring the team, so with growing your team, how do you find the right talent?
In your newsletter.
Yeah.
Thanks for featuring that.
It's really hard to find the right talent. We actually did a couple of things to to boost that or be creative about it. Casper made a very funny video where we showed all our office dogs. Yeah. It got quite a lot of good responses on that.
Someone said it was a shameless use of office dogs because we had three.
Well, we put them to work. Mm-hmm. But I think what works best is outreach by one of us. We just go on LinkedIn, we look for interesting profiles and just ask for a coffee and take it from there. Yeah, but building up the right team is... It's also challenging. We actually started this year with a company called First Mind, where we do personality tests with the whole team. Okay. Also, of course, to understand the dynamics a bit more in the team, what motivates people, what's the right way to manage them. It also actually made me understand Casper a lot better because what turns out, we are in completely different phases. Like I'm in the present, operational and now, and Casper's only in the future. But when you talk to each other, that can actually cause for quite some frustration, I might call it, but both sides, because it helps you understand a little bit where the other person is coming from. So now also when we hire, it's mandatory that they do the personality test. And then we look like who are is going to be their colleague? Are they more a starter or a closer? And then really try to build a winning team like that. So I think we're doing it better now than we did 5 years ago.
I like that idea of doing a personality test.
Yeah. Also nice as co-founders to do it together. Yeah, I actually
know probably some red flags.
It's really funny. Like Casper has no human traits and I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a score of 0 in humanity. So if I give you feedback and you're crying inside, I will not notice. I will keep on going. So that's not funny.
Yeah, we had some interesting insights.
And Faya, with which company did you do that?
They called First Minds.
First Minds. Definitely check that out.
Yeah, we're big fans. Like I like it so much. I also did a 2-day course myself, so I can read the outcomes, like an 8-page report. And now I make it my party trick. So when I have friends over at my house, I make them do the test before they come. We open a bottle of wine, and then we just go through the test and talk about...
And the test takes 30 minutes, so my... One of my friends will arrive in the house and he will be told to sit with headphones on and do his test for 30 minutes before he can have some wine.
To see what drink he needs to get, tequila or maybe something more relaxing.
I need to practice. Yeah.
Season 2 of What's Ecoming is powered by Shopify, the world's leading e-commerce platform. 2022 is without a doubt Shopify's year with the launch of Shopify 2.0, Shopify Markets, and Shopify Audiences. These updates are bringing in a new era for e-commerce development. Quite simply, if you want to build an e-commerce platform that's better than the rest, you have to build it on Shopify. For enterprise businesses, check out Shopify Plus, the only cost-effective enterprise platform that's built for change. Ask Phil is a Plus certified partner. Contact us to learn more about how Shopify could be right for your business.
Yeah, I think talking about the past and hearing where you've come from and where LabFresh is at the moment, I would like to take the time to look forward together and see what's e-coming. And starting with the retail space, because things have been changing around the world in the last 2 years. I think, Casper, you told me that you've been just opening up a new store in Denmark. And I'm very curious to hear about your vision on the collaboration between physical retail spaces and your e-commerce platform.
We opened our first flagship store in Amsterdam a year ago. Great timing during Corona. And we're going to open one in Copenhagen in September, October, hopefully. I do think that having an offline presence is needed to build a brand. Like if you're a direct-to-consumer brand, having that place where people can come to touch your clothes, especially with us with technology, I think it really, really helps us.
I would say that when I got excited about this space, 5 years ago, we all said this sentence about how CAC is the new rent. So the customer acquisition cost is the new rent. And now I often hear a lot of saying the opposite, that rent is a new CAC.
Rent is cheaper than Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. Like right now, like the cost of online marketing went up so much. So it's cheaper for us and we have better margins for the stores than we have for the online store. And at the same time, you can get amazing deals for retail spaces. Because if you walk around here in Amsterdam in the Nine Streets and Van Baalestraat and so on, there are so many for rent signs out there. So, you know, it has never been an easier time to get a good retail deal, and it has never been harder to get a low CAC.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we heard the same from Mark from Ace and Tate.
Yeah.
He also considered his retail space really as marketing outlets.
Yeah. We thought so in the beginning first that it was like, oh, it's fine if it's just break even. We just want it as a more of a branding exercise than it is a sales channel. But it's becoming actually a quite good sales channel as well. Yeah, so I think it also will really help us grow in the next years. And what we do unique in our space is we have our office on top. So basically when you come in, our office is on top of the store and it's all open. So you basically, our meeting room is on the ground floor. So people are shopping, you see us having our meetings there. We can have a chat with the customer when they come in. Like, community for us is really important because we launched on 4 Kickstarter campaigns. We paid for the store with a Crowd About Now loan. So I think it's very nice to have a direct connection to your customer.
We even put the names of our 232 angel investors on the back wall behind the counter in the store.
Yeah. So that's cool.
These 232 angels made the dream come true.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And how do you tell the story about the brand, about the technology in the store? Because I can imagine online it's quite easy with the video. You can drop some red wine.
It's because you're an online guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's way easier to show the red wine trick in real life and put red wine on the product in the store. That's mind-blowing more than the video, right?
But our landlord was surprised. Like, why do you want a sink in the middle of the store? But we have a sink in the middle of the store.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we can show, like, what it does. Yeah.
And so you just said, like, we opened our first store in the Van Baarlestraat, right?
1 year ago.
1 year ago in the middle of the COVID crisis.
Yeah. We had to close like during the best months of retail years. Yeah.
How did your vision on physical retail change during COVID? Or did it change? Or
I think it didn't change a lot. It just made me also confirm that retail is really not dying. People like to go to stores. I think it helps you build the brand. Like, now we come from being this weird online brand that throws red wine on each other and having now a serious store in the Van Baarlestraat. So I actually think it really helps building the brand. And there's still a lot of men who don't want to buy online, who like to try something on, especially a shirt. It just needs to be a good fit.
Yeah. What you see with shirt sales, at least, is that a lot of our customers just stopped buying shirts for a very long time. A lot of people just bought a lot less clothing. And when the stores opened, not just us, but from a lot of our friends, we hear of this amazing amount of people coming into the stores and saying, I didn't buy any shirts for a year, so, you know, help me.
That happened during Corona. Like, our white and blue business shirts, that was like half of our revenue, that went down to like 5-6% after Corona. So there was quite of a, a pill to swallow. Like, how do you say that in English? A bitter pill. Like, the first week, like, revenue basically stopped for a week. So that was a bit scary. But then we also have t-shirts and sweaters, and we cranked up that production. So we managed to still grow into Corona years. But we do see that trend that everything has to become more comfortable.
And if we switch now from retail to e-commerce, I already heard a bit about the rising cost of CAC. What is the most important project you're now working on?
I would say the biggest change in the online marketing game, at least, is this move that already started years ago, but the move towards less perfect, lo-fi content, user-generated stuff, especially with TikTok, that for someone like me who grew up on, I made my first Facebook ad in 2013, and I was over the moon about this amazing way to scale your business. I have to forget all those learnings because TikTok changed that game. So we're trying to roll it out now where we say, we make TikToks instead of ads, and then we turn it into ads on other channels afterwards. But in our heads and the whole team, we want to make things look beautiful and perfect. That's what we're proud of. But it's just so expensive to scale the perfect looking content.
And on TikTok, so personally, I don't have TikTok on my phone. I already feel a bit old.
Yeah, you're really old.
But do you also really use your phone to create the videos, or do you have an external camera to create it and then upload it on TikTok?
You can do both, but usually if people use too fancy equipment, they also spend too much time editing and they turn it into something that's bigger than it should be.
Yeah.
If you say you have maximum 1 hour to shoot and 1 hour to edit, and then we post whatever you make, then usually it will be less perfect and also better, more authentic. But we're not experts in this stuff. We just started scaling it and some amazing results, and now we have to be serious.
Because TikTok didn't allow for paid advertisement for that long. So I think it's really like an underutilized channel. I'm also not on TikTok. I also live a bit under a rock. I come from a different area. Now I download it and then we have fun at night after a couple of wines. We swipe to some funny stories. But I do think it could be a good channel. Even for our customers that are a little bit older than the teenagers we expect to be on TikTok.
Because now, so you're already advertising on TikTok at the moment?
Since 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
For paid ads.
Yeah. And how are the first results?
They are mind-blowing. Yeah? It's very, very cheap. And if you have the right tracking set up, it's also profitable ads. But the pixels and the tracking that TikTok provides you with, it just shows very, very few conversions. So we set it up in something called Northbeam, where they can track the clicks and views and the attribution for much more days. And then you can suddenly see that it's working.
And that's really cool. And Northbeam, can you maybe elaborate a bit on that?
I'm not sure I should have mentioned it. It's kind of like a
trick
like
of the trade,
like a real game changer. But it's just a data platform where you install pixels and snippets of codes on all your landing pages directly in Shopify. And you put it on your checkout and your order confirmation page and, of course, all your marketing channels. And then the tracking is just crazy optimized compared to what Facebook will allow you to see or TikTok. I think most of your listeners will know that after the new iOS privacy rules, you can't really trust what Facebook tells you. Facebook always tells you that they're shit.
Yeah.
Right? That you lost a ton of money this week again. Oh, but then we can actually fix that.
Interesting.
And it is because indeed we hear it a lot that the iOS 15 changed a lot for everybody. And does the Northbeam also do it with like server-side tracking or is it really on the client side?
I think they have both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is but it a bit same like Segment?
No, I think it's the same. Probably, you know, it also Triple Whale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what like as there's so many different analytics platforms, but if you have one that does not look just at the cache, but they look at the accrual performance, then that's what you need to do. So when you look at cash, you're like, I spent 100 euros today and I had 100 euros in direct sales, then my ROAS is one. That's how Google Analytics and Shopify themselves and Facebook will look at it. And that's almost never a good idea. But if it's accrual performance, a customer will maybe have had 4 interactions where he's clicking or viewing stuff from you. And then you spread the revenue you get on day 12, you spread it over every touch point you had during the last 12 days. Yeah.
Yeah. So indeed you can attribute the profit to the right channel.
Yeah. So when I look in Northbeam, it will say, oh, my revenue yesterday was 14,000. But when I look in Shopify, it was actually 24. But that 24,000 doesn't matter because some of it was actually created way earlier when the customer saw us the first time.
Yeah, my mind, maybe you can hear it still crackling. I'm thinking like, what is Casper talking about? But slowly I'm understanding like what you're saying.
Oh, so
you're saying, what was the name, Nord?
Northbeam.
Northbeam.
Free
Northbeam.
Advertisement.
Yeah.
You there it can say like it's 12K this month. Well, in Shopify, you have a higher number. But Northbeam?
Northbeam will just say that when you spend 100 euros in my shop, then they spread it out and say 20 euros comes from the Google search, 20 euros comes from the TikTok video, and 60 euros comes from Facebook.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying all of it comes from the last or the first click or something like that.
So really proper attribution of your marketing channels.
Yeah.
Over the lifetime.
Yeah.
That is really cool. And you already talked a bit about like user-generated content for that there was a game changer and you focus on it. That's more on the social media side of like advertising.
Well, that's about the future. You asked me what I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
I mean, we're of course doing it to some extent, but we have to go way harder on it in the future.
I think it's also a mix with content. You do need the pretty pictures. And we went to Curaçao for a spring summer shoot. Also because we just needed a holiday.
I think it was very important we were both
there. It was very important we were both there. Yes, exactly. But those pictures, if we have some beautiful pictures, it makes it so much easier to make the website look good.
Yeah.
So we need that too. I think it's a combination of, yeah, user-generated content and also still having the aesthetically nice-looking shoots.
Nice, because on your website, I don't see that much user-generated content.
No, it doesn't belong on the website. So that's a good point of Lotte.
Okay.
Like, when it's on a product page, on the website or something like that, then we have to make people trust that we make beautiful things.
Yeah.
But when it's first touch, then it's okay to make it more authentic. To an extent where it can even be me a lot in the video, even though we have weird accents and are not professional models.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they really bash like that recruitment video we did. Casper get a lot of like a bashing on his accent.
It's Dutch people telling me, can you just speak Dutch? You're in the Netherlands. Yeah. Like, I'm so sorry, but I don't speak.
Couldn't they found anyone in that company who speaks better English than he did?
Yeah. Oh my God, that voice. Yeah. They're really funny on TikTok. They give a lot of constructive feedback.
Yeah.
Hey, and so if you look at your e-commerce platform, so pretty pictures on the product page, but what will be the, like one of the, what do you think will be important topics to focus on the upcoming year?
I would say it's, the big move is to go to Shopify 2.0. It came out 6 months ago or so. We just did a new rebuild of our Shopify 1.0 and we feel like they should have told us they were almost done. Of course, they had been talking about it for a long time. So we have to do that migration, but at the same time, we are a small company. We don't have a UX designer in the team or a Shopify developer, anything like that. So it just, it becomes an opportunity to rethink everything and then change the design and so on. And then, yeah, we will turn it into a big project, take our time and then, make a truly 2.0 version of how you shop with Labfresh.
And it was truly 2.0. So the 2.0, indeed, we know there was like a big release of Shopify. So you can customize content better and customize page better. You have way more flexibility with meta fields. What's like the goal then to go to 2.0? Is it really to enrich the experience on the website?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the knowledge about this we have from you guys and also seeing how you build this nice theme for filling pieces.
Our head of e-com is a big fan, as Phil said. As Phil said.
Yeah. We have to hear about these guys again. But it's also, there's some factors you can build into it if we take the time to do the groundwork ourselves before we start. There's a lot you can do with loyalty, for example, that doesn't get enough attention in our Klaviyo email flows and on the website. We want to launch a sort of memberships, and we already have a customer that invests and that pre-orders and prepay stuff that we develop later. And like we want to get this community factor really integrated instead of just being something people do on external sites. So it's not entirely mapped out yet. But yeah, some sort of paid memberships and crowdfunding and pre-ordering and so on. Like all these things have to feel really natural.
And I think one thing, but maybe that's not only website specific, but in general, is that we see our customer service as one of our USPs. So our Trustpilot has to be good. And we really go the extra mile. So if I have a bad day, I actually go through our Trustpilot reviews and it makes me happy. Like it's like love letters that we get from customers. And I think if you're a D2C, mainly online brand, you really need to do that. But it does come from a place from us where we actually truly care.
And those customers, where's the biggest concentration of your customers nowadays? Because you spoke that at the start you were shipping all over the world, but some places were less interesting commercially to send it to?
Yeah, we actually made a conscious decision because in the beginning we were really spread out. Also do that we launched on Kickstarter. At some point Denmark was actually the biggest country because we also joined Dragon's Den Denmark when we just started. And then the opportunity came to do Dragon's Den here in the Netherlands. And then you have 1.5 million people watching you on TV, which is of course a huge opportunity. Then we really decided it's the Netherlands first. And I think we like crossing the chasm. It's easier to do that when you're a big fish in a small pond than a small fish in a big pond.
Yeah.
And that really made a difference for us. So for this year, it'd be really the Netherlands. And in the last quarter of the year, it will really be Denmark first. So we're opening a store there. We're going to do a collaboration there with a Danish comedian. We're sponsoring a Danish football club. So at the end of the year, we're going to go hard there. And I think Denmark is ready for us.
Yeah. Denmark is, you're coming home to Denmark.
That's my home country, yes. Yeah. And a lot of our Danish customers and the Danish media and so on, they all assume we are a Danish company because we also did the Dragon's Den in Denmark when we just started.
And so the Dragon's Den, you did the Dragon's Den in the Netherlands and in Denmark, right?
Yes.
And is it like part of your rollout plan? So if you now say, let's go to Italy.
You have to find an Italian co-founder.
Yeah. Well, we just watched a lot of Shark Tank when we lived in Berlin. After the cloak when my first company was acquired, we had to move there. And we just watched, I think, all 12 seasons of Shark Tank. And we thought it would be really cool to be in Shark Tank one day. That was it. Then we did it in Denmark, and it was crazy good. We sold our entire warehouse was empty after 24 hours. And then we saw it was announced in the Netherlands, and we thought, we'd use another day like that.
It's great because you get, what I said, there's like 1.5 million people watching that episode. So then afterwards, I'm in postkantoor. Yeah, I don't know how to say that in English, but then you have some, oh, hey, mate, I saw you on TV. You did such a good job. It really changed something for us. So we're very happy that we joined.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest marketing campaigns of the last years, right?
Yeah. And it's free. All these, and it's like also people who are watching it is the right audience. They care about startups. They like to hear about their journey. And we're also really open about, what we do and how we do it. And it's also special that we do it together. We're also privately together. So we spend 23 hours per day together, which is sometimes pretty intense. Have you met Casper? No.
I love it. Lot is always nice.
And I score high on empathy on my personality test. Casper doesn't.
See, very nice.
And the TV show in Denmark, is it also a public TV show or is it commercial? Because in the Netherlands, you cannot call out your brand name.
Yeah, really annoying. We even had to tape off our logos before we went on screen. But I think in Denmark, that was different, right?
It's a public channel, but you can still say your name.
Yeah.
And it is the biggest TV show in Denmark. And it created a ton of brands that are doing really well. It's really, like, it changed the whole discussion and how people view startups. So when I graduated from business school, when I was a young man, we all applied for Lego and Carlsberg and Maersk and all the big companies. But now you see a lot of the top talent actually wanting to work in startups no one heard of because entrepreneurship, it's cool. And I also feel in the Netherlands, it's something that's a bit cooler and more attractive now than a couple of years ago. And Dragon's Den plays a part in that, I think.
And how did you ensure that the free publicity of Dragon's Den in the Netherlands turned into people finding your brand, knowing the story? Because, how did you prepare for the show, let's say?
I took all of our money, all of our available cash, and then I booked in print ads and sponsored native articles on Nupo.nl and the football sites, and the rest we put in online marketing, and then we closed our eyes.
And prayed?
Yeah.
And that, and then the money started rolling in?
Yeah, because a lot of people saw it, but they didn't see our name. So you had to remind them afterwards that, hey, it's us. You can just click here and then you can get the full experience.
Yeah, Lotte Shirt or Shirt Dragon's Den was higher in Google's terms than Stain Repellent Shirt for a while.
Yeah, in that period, if you were looking for an actual dragon shirt, that would be hard to find because our shirts would be there on Google.
Who wants nice. That?
If you use data in your, let's say, day-to-day work, is LabFresh data-driven?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think most companies say that they are data-driven. I have tried in the past to be truly data-driven where we look at it every day. And I think it's a mess. We change directions all the time. It goes on a whim. You hire too many people. I think data is excellent to look at every week and every month. But then we have to be very selective with what we're testing. It has to be big enough things. And we have to design the dashboards in the right way so that you don't drown for people in stuff that don't matter because then they end up thinking about it too much and spending too much time on it.
And what are the most important data points you look at?
Each team has different points that matters. The one that probably has the biggest effect across the whole company is one that I also had when I was a young man working in container shipping at Maersk, and that's OTD, on-time delivery. We will plan in a lot of things, but factories are not always on time. Things can go wrong. So that's every week when we have a team meeting, we start with saying, okay, what are we planning to push live and where? And that OTD, that data, that's of course something that comes from the product side. It's not like online marketing where you can just look at a dashboard and you know what's up. You have to actually talk to people and say, can you confirm the delivery date? Can you confirm that the container is booked in, and so on?
OTD.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it before.
I really haven't. No, it's the first time I heard that the D2C company is cool.
Well, when you make a physical product, it's all about having the right products. Every time when we want to do campaign about a new launch for a new product, it has to be in.
Yeah,
and that definitely. Is that's indeed every Tuesday. Like, okay, what's in? What can we do this week? What do we have to postpone? Then we have to ask our head of e-com, can you please build a pre-order app? Because otherwise it's too late. We need to sell it now. so you have to be creative sometimes.
Isn't it possible to make like bigger, how do you say that? Bigger stock amounts?
Yeah,
stock more in the warehouse.
Yeah, you can do that when the product is like set. But what we often had is then we are making small tweaks. So we have our white knitted shirt. We think it was a little bit too see-through. Then we keep developing and making it a little bit thicker. If we get too much on stock, then we're stuck with a fabric that we like less than the other one that we're working on right now. But we do have a couple of fabrics now that we like so much, so we can have a couple of thousand meters always there. So when anything else comes late, you can still produce your NOS. So that is where we're almost at.
And there's also the factor of money, because we actually didn't take any funding except the seed funding. And I think we have 600,000 or something like that in stock that we paid for.
Yeah.
If we want to grow 200% this year, we have to find 600,000 euros and buy twice as much stock. And if it doesn't work, we are stuck with the stock. And then we have to do discounts, and we don't like that. No. We don't have a high margin. So we designed the whole business to sell at full price at all times, except for when we turn 5 years old and have a birthday deal on May 28.
And is there a reason, a reason that you don't take like a new investment? So after the seed round?
If we would do a new investment, we would do it with our customers and do it as equity crowdfunding. But right now it's not the focus. We are turning a small profit. We're doing the things we want to do. The new products are ready. I think, you know, if Lotte is the one building stores, if she keeps building stores that are very big and expensive, then it would make a lot of sense to ask our customers for if they want to own a few shares.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really about building a sustainable, lean and mean business.
Yeah. I mean, one reason is that we think it's more fun that way, but another reason is also that we are not a good investment case for a venture capital fund. They need you to grow in a very aggressive way that we don't. I think a lot of, if you look to the US, which in terms of DTC and Shopify and so on are always a few, a year or two ahead of us, you see all the direct-to-consumer brands that got stocklisted now from Warby Parker and down, they're all disappointing. Stocks, the share prices are falling. This adjusted EBITDA that they had that showed that they were kind of profitable, that turned out to be bullshit, and all of them are burning money. Yeah. And it's just not a business model that works well for VCs. That's why the VCs lost money on it in the past. And I don't like to have investors and then disappoint them. It's not going to make my life easier, more comfortable. It's not going to make me more pleasant for Lotte to be around.
A physical product is just not software. It goes a little bit slower, and there's either cash flow restraints. But we do think it would be nice to do another crowdfunding for equity. We did them all now. We did Kickstarter pre-order. We did a loan and crowd about now. So I do think there would be a nice way to end our community raising of what we did with the company. I think it's a quite unique way how we always raise funds through community and build it with community. So that would still be a nice funding round to do. And maybe end of the year, beginning next year.
And previously, the crowdfunders did not receive equity. No.
Kickstarter is just pre-orders. Yeah. So you pay for your product, you get it later. Crowdabout Now is a loan. So we paid them back. We asked for 200,000. And then within 3 weeks, we got 200% funded. So that was amazing. That's cool. So maybe we do it again for the Danish store. But I really like doing it together with community.
What D2C brand do you admire and why?
You want to take it or should I?
Do you have one?
Well, I have one right now. It's maybe a bit unexpected because it's about food, but I really like Every. And I think it's because of a founder, you're always, you stay late at the office or you don't feel like cooking or have time to get something and you still want to eat something healthy, but your weeks are always different. So sometimes you do cook fresh food you have to throw out. So it's like these meal boxes that you put in your freezer and they're just really tasty and healthy.
What's the name?
Every.
Every.
Every Foods. That's one of the companies I'm now using the most of. So I always have some of their boxes in the freezer. So I can also, otherwise I just always end up at the bakery across the street with my cheese croissant and cheese sticks. Which are very nice, but the summer is coming.
Is it a bit like All Plants?
I don't know that,
I think a similar brand from the UK.
Could be.
No, you mean All Greens? All Plants is like All Greens, I think.
All Plants is like deep frozen healthy meals.
Yeah, that's the same. I would say so, yeah.
It's a Dutch company.
I think it's German, actually.
Oh, German.
Yeah.
Oh, let's take it off the podcast.
And for you, Casper?
So I get a lot of inspiration from Danish companies, actually, how they do online. I think they do a lot of really value-driven communication. And some years ago, I was part of the board in a Danish comfortable high-heel startup, Rockamore. And to see how she now has become this icon for business women, and you use these stilettos to claim your place, that you can be a woman, a real woman, and a business person at the same time. It's amazing to see. There's these billboards all over Copenhagen now that shows one of them is with her mom on it. And, you know, another one is of famous business leaders who are men who are also wearing stilettos. And
that's
it's just
cool.
Like,
that's really cool.
Yeah, she's creating this amazing movement.
Interesting.
Yeah, really cool.
We have some new new brands.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I think she still sells high heels in up to size 45.
If you're interested.
We could try it.
It was rockamore.com.
Great.
And then last question. I'm very curious to hear if you have like a real subject matter expert in the D2C community of which you think this is a guy you should follow or check out.
Yes, I have someone who might be the most helpful guy in the entire world. He's called Leonardo, and his business is from Brazil, where he's from. He lives in Amsterdam now. And every time I sit with him, it can turn into a couple of hours where I'm just full of ideas. And he's the guy I know that tests the most stuff. If he decides to do TikTok, he will, you know, produce 100 videos and try every single bidding technique and then map it. I think he's very inspiring to listen to.
And Leonardo, does he also have a last name?
Yeah, Caracas. and the business is called, it's called GoCase.
So he's like all-round marketing guru.
Yeah, I mean, he's the co-founder of the company. Yeah. And they sell smartphone and, you know, they sell cases and other accessories to phones and tablets online. I think the business must have more than 100 people now, but it's just focused on doing this all over the world in an insane pace.
But is he easy for other people to follow? Like, does he have an email or socials?
Nice blog.
No.
Oh, I think that's
what you
want.
No, this is also okay. We can invite him to the podcast and get some knowledge out of him.
Yeah, I thought it was based on someone you wanted to invite in here, and I would love to hear him on this podcast.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
great. I'm going to reach out to him.
Yeah.
If you can intro us to him.
Yeah. I would be happy to.
Nice. Okay, that's it for today. Thanks a lot, Lotte and Casper.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
Thanks for listening to the show. This has been What's Ecoming, brought to you by Ask Phil and Shopify. Don't forget to follow us on socials. We're on Instagram at Ask Phil, and you can find us on LinkedIn as well. Find the links to everything you need in the podcast description. See you next month for another episode of What's Ecoming, and don't forget to subscribe and review.